now I'm recording. That would have been terrible.
I'm gonna say it doesn't say it. Okay.
That would have been terrible.
Oh my god.
Could you imagine?
Great start.
Yeah.
Great start.
Love it. All right, everybody. Well, welcome back to the Don't Go In There podcast. As you can tell, we are in tip-top shape. For you that are
we're right there with it.
for those that are just joining us for the first time, I'm Bill. That's Ashley. We've been out of a little hiatus.
Hello.
And now we're back. And we're kind of winging this one. Not so...
back, baby.
What's the word I'm looking for, Ash? We're not
structured, formal,
scripted.
Boring. No,
yeah,
I'm just kidding.
Monotoned. So, we're back. We're ready. And we got a doozy for the first episode. We're just going to do some house cleanup things. We're not going to take too much time after this episode on house cleaning. We want to get into stuff, but since this is our first episode back, we definitely want to just let you guys know what's going on with us, what's been going on with us. It's been 2 years, Ash, I believe.
Oh my god, yeah.
Yeah,
how crazy is that?
Yeah, I was living in the other house.
It was 2020, yep.
Yep. So, yeah. Just a little what's going on. I've been out in Utah for, you know, the past 2 years. We just got word that we're now moving back to the East Coast. So, perfect timing for starting our podcast.
Yeah, it's a great time. But at least you're in the same time zone now.
Yes,
well, you will be.
It's going to be so much easier. So, Ash, what's been going on with you the past 2 years? I know you were busy with school. That's kind of... I was busy with school.
Yeah. I graduated. I got my bachelor's, so that's exciting. I'm doing absolutely nothing with it. Became a mobile notary. That's exciting. And I'm learning golf. I start golf classes, so that's exciting.
Anne's gone a couple of times with me the past month or so. She plays Anne's rules. When she's done with the hole, she just picks up the ball.
It's fine. She's winning.
Yeah, in her head.
That's how I play.
Well, oh man, I'm just like so out of it right now. Like everybody listening is probably like checking out already, but. We'll
like,
get
did
back
you take your CBD gummies? No, I'm just kidding.
Actually, you know, speaking of which, we did get some awesome stuff in the mail. It's called Magic Mind. And Ash, I still have to send you yours, but I'm telling you right now, I've been taking it the past like 3 days. And I can't tell you how much better it is not forgetting everything in the house when you go out. Because that's what
I do.
You
are known as... the forgetful one. I think you forgot all your police stuff one time. Keys. Didn't you forget your phone on a plane one time?
Yes. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Now, I will say I still like forgot one thing the other day when I went golfing, but it wasn't that big of a deal. I remember my keys, my phone, my wallet. This stuff is pretty good.
That's impressive.
Yeah, and I've been been taking it every morning with my coffee, so... I'm like flying high. We got power washing done today on the house. I've been so
snap.
Like tuned in. It's been awesome. So basically, I take a shot of it. It comes in a little bottle, and you just take one shot of it. You shake it up. It actually tastes like green tea. It's really delicious, actually. I found out if you put it in the refrigerator, it's a little bit better than just lukewarm.
You don't like warm green tea?
No. And don't forget to shake it, because I did, and then all the stuff was at the bottom. But it tastes good, especially if you like green tea. Like I said, you take it in the morning with your coffee. I did notice that my coffee intake went down the past 3 days. So the first day I took it with my first glass, then I had two more glasses after that. And then yesterday and today, I've only had one and a half cups of coffee. So it helps, because I get coffee belly really easily, and I don't know if you ever had the coffee belly, but I hate it, and it makes me feel like
all
woozy. So yeah, it has like L-theanine. I'm going to screw every one of these words up, so I apologize, but it has L-theanine, and basically what that does is caffeine shuts off some receptors, and when it opens back up, it wants more coffee. This leaves that receptor open a little bit, so it keeps constantly flowing through. I probably jacked that explanation up, but That's how I took it.
It sounded very scientific.
I am kind of sort of a doctor. That's my wife.
She's gonna love that.
It has lion manes, mushrooms, and I don't know if you've heard it, but I heard in a ton of podcasts where a lot of these companies are using these mushrooms to help with energy in their drinks. I'm not a big mushroom person, but you don't taste mushrooms, so I'm cool with it.
Oh, okay. I like that. That's interesting.
Yeah. So if you guys are interested, just go and visit them at magicmind.co. We also are offering you a 40% off your first subscription or 20% off your first time purchase if you use our code.
Don't go 20.
So if you go to magicmind.co/don't go, you can get 40% off your first subscription or 20% off your first purchase. So not bad. Saves you a little
bit
of money.
That is not bad at all.
And you can cut down on your caffeine intake, because I know I do. And you won't forget your phone on an airplane. Possibly.
I can't say that
you won't, because I don't want you coming back later and suing me, but you probably won't forget your phone on an airplane.
This could potentially help. Well, I'm excited to try this, so you better send me mine.
I'm sending it. I have a whole box of it.
Yeah.
So, all right, so we're past that. Let's get into kind of what we're all here for, and that is to learn about true crime and paranormal. Our first episode is freaking crazy. We wrote like 14 pages of notes on it, and this was just one documentary on Netflix. I would highly suggest you guys go watch it. I will say it jumps around like a little bit too much to follow the whole story, because like as I'm writing down notes, I like to write it down in like a timeline, but I found that I had to constantly go back and forth because they just, for whatever reason, like to jump around. So it's called, I believe, The 24 Faces of Billy Milligan.
This was pretty insane, and there's a lot of different things we're going to into.
Mm-hmm.
I'm super excited.
So it's called The Monsters Inside, The 24 Faces of Billy Milligan. So highly recommend it. Like I said, it is a little jumpy at some points, but it's actually pretty good. And there's a lot of information on there. I knew about this case a little bit, sorry guys, you're going to hear a little bit of squeaking from my chair. I'm sitting on like a 1930s wooden chair. I'm waiting for my office chair to get in. So you're going to hear a little squeaking. This chair is like...
It goes with the creepy theme that we have going on here.
Well, it's made for like a toddler, I feel like. These big hips don't fit in this chair.
These hips don't lie.
No, they do not. So I heard a little bit about this case. Like every once in a while you hear about the Milligan... what is it called? The Milligan Law. And that's the law where you can't make money off of your crimes. It's because of him. Although he did make some money, most of it he never saw and ended up going to, I believe, the state or to bankruptcy creditors. But we will learn more about that later on. So, Ash, do you have anything else?
No, just make sure you like and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and I think anywhere else. We're still trying to make sure we're on all the podcast platforms. Follow us on TikTok at Don't Go In There Pod, and have an Instagram and a Facebook group and page. So just go hang, find out our social media, check it out, follow us, and share with a friend. That's all. Yeah.
I actually have one more thing to add. We did really go through everything before starting this and wanted to make sure that we heard a lot of the complaints and stuff that was said when we were live last time, and the big issue was our sound. It is very hard to do this remotely without Zoom, and we don't like Zoom because it's hard to record the call. So we did this, and we're starting a new one. We're not getting paid for that. Actually, we're paying these guys. It's Soundtrap from Spotify for podcasters. So guys, please let us know if our sound is better. We're going to be doing a lot of stuff with it, trying new stuff. So please bear with us as well as we're still learning this. Our podcasts are going to be 45 minutes to an hour, Ash, maybe a little longer here and there. This one, we might just take it down just to like 30 minutes or so, just because it's our first one back and we want to make sure that we give you the best product that we can.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay. So if that's it, what do you say, Ash? Let's go in there.
Let's go in there.
All right, so it's 1977. Jimmy Carter is the president. Star Wars is just released. And then on the Ohio State University campus, there's a panic going on. This panic lasts for like 12 days, and it's because there is a campus rapist that is... Campus rapist, that's hard to say.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah. Sorry, my phone's going off too. So this is just the greatest podcast ever.
It is. Just, yes. Like, the focus is right real, there.
Real life.
You should people. Go take your magic mind.
I already did. But I will say this is just real life, and you're going to have to deal with it.
Yeah.
So on the campus of Ohio State, there is a serial rapist going around, or a start of one, and it lasts like 12 days. So it doesn't last too long, but could you imagine like being a woman walking around the university, not knowing where this guy's going to strike? Because his first victim was approached in a parking lot. The second one was actually leaving the hospital, the university hospital, after her shift, and she was kidnapped. Both of those happened near like the medical center. So one was the parking lot of like near the medical center. One was in the parking lot, obviously, of the hospital. The third was near the dorms, so that's getting even closer to all the students.
That's when they're getting bold.
Yeah, and then this fourth one, he decided to go downtown Columbus and rape an office worker in the parking lot.
Oh my gosh. See, parking lots are scary.
Well, they're probably not well lit either. So, all four were raped and robbed of their money afterwards. And I think even one, this is how they put it. He was savvy enough he had a charismatic feature about him that he was actually able to get a ride home afterwards. And I'm like, I don't know if I would put that as charismatic. Like, she's scared of shit. She's probably thinking if I drive him home, he's not going to kill me.
Yeah, first off, like, I hate when everyone says, like, oh, like, how everyone describes Ted Bundy. So he's charismatic, so handsome. That's just why, you know, so many people, you know, kind of fell for their charms. I hate when they're described that way because it's like, oh, he's not. It wasn't his charm that she wanted to drive him home after he raped her. It was because she was scared. It's survival mode.
To the fullest. And then when they say, like, yeah, he's good looking. So it's not that he's charismatic. Like, they just, their guard's down. They're in a situation where their guard's down. If with Ted Bundy, not with Billy Milligan. But, your guard might be down too because you're leaving work after a shift. Like, you're tired. You want to go home.
But also, he might just come up and say, like, can I have a jump? My car's dead. Or, you know, whatever.
Yeah. It doesn't take much. And not the sad thing, but I don't know who, I do like to pay, we like to pay tribute to the victims. They didn't come out in the documentary, but I did try to look up who they were to see how they were doing, but it never mentions them. So hopefully they're doing okay. I mean, I know it was 1977, but, you know, we do want to show that we do respect the victims and their wishes to stay private and stuff. So I didn't want to pry too much on it.
Yeah.
But what was really nice is the campus actually organized volunteers to walk the women on to and from campus, to their classes, to whatever they were doing on campus, whether it was just like an activity, a sporting event, whatever. They had groups of people walking together. No one really walked alone anymore, which totally makes sense.
Yeah, that's super nice to have on a campus because you can be by yourself a lot of times. But for them to, like, respond that quickly when things are happening is really amazing.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, like, how many cases have we had where they don't respond at all?
Yeah, exactly. Like, they're not believed or, you know, they're like, oh, this is a one-off. And at least everyone knew, like, this is not a one-off and this is not something that's going away. So we need to protect everybody.
Exactly. But... Fortunately, these women were able to recall the incident, the victims, in detail, providing a police sketch, and were able to take the police to the correct location of where the incident occurred, which you would think is not, like, hard for them to do, especially when it was like the parking lot of their work or the parking lot of the hospital. But like a rape happens near the dorms, sometimes you don't know where. You can just be abducted into a random bush. You know, it happens on the Riverwalk Trail down in Pittsburgh. You know, you know where you are, but you don't know the exact location. A lot of it looks similar. So it is actually kind of good that they were able to do that. And they actually didn't wash their cars or anything. So that actually helped too, because they were able to pull fingerprints from the windshield.
Oh, and, that's so smart.
Mm-hmm. So they took fingerprints from the windshield and some other spots of the car, and they were actually able to find fingerprints that were taken from an earlier incident. And those fingerprints came back to Billy Milligan. He had done time in Ohio Youth Commission, which is just juvie, fancy word for juvie, for, I mean, no surprise here, but a rape and an assault with a deadly weapon in 1972. He had other run-ins with the law that produced mugshots. A lot of it was, like, petty stuff. But
that's what you see with these guys. Is like, it starts off small and petty stuff, and it builds and it builds. And
mm-hmm. I think we'll actually learn a little bit more about his past, too, whenever we talk about his family and his past. There's a couple more incidents. But basically, this is why he was identified. You got to remember, this is 1977. There is no DNA. There is no... If there is security cameras, not getting anything off of those. They barely work now when you go to get evidence. Every time you go to like a...
It'd be like someone sketching it.
You go to a 7-Eleven and go, hey, does that camera work? Oh, no, that's just there for show. And it's like, what?
It's like, can we just get a SimpliSafe? Get like a little camera? Like, there's so many now. Like, there's no reason no camera should work.
Or they don't pay this. So it does... record, but it like keeps for like 2 days because they don't want to pay the subscription.
Oh yeah, we're gonna record over it.
Yeah, it's a pain.
It's annoying.
Or it does work and nobody knows how to burn like the footage onto a DVD for me, or knows how to send it off to a USB or anything.
And I feel like you're talking from experience here in your cop background.
Maybe.
Yeah. Feel like it's that deep anger and frustration coming up.
Anyhow, I digress. So eventually the police were able to get a search warrant for Billy's residence. As they were serving the warrant, Billy actually told them that there was a bomb in the house or in the apartment. So they called the fire department. I don't know if this is how they did it in the 70s, but they called the fire department to put it out or whatever. I don't know. But it just turned out to be a fake bomb. He actually had something by his dresser that had a bunch of wires and stuff coming out of it. So
he was trying to buy time.
Yeah. You know, during the search, they found driver's licenses, jewelry, and other quote unquote trophies. Everybody knows. I mean, if you guys listen to true crime at all, or if you're a cop or whatever, you know about trophies. They take things that belong to these women and hold them to remind them of that incident. Kind of gross. They were also able to find, like, I don't want to call, I wrote fine art, but it's not fine art. It's just well-done art throughout the house, which didn't match anything else of the house, like all the decor and everything. And this comes into play later. So just... write that down in your detective notebook. And say this. We'll come back to this later.
Put a pin in it.
He was assigned two public attorneys that had great pedigrees of either getting a not guilty verdict or pleading out to much lesser charges and sentences. That happens all the time now. You don't have to be a good defense attorney now. Did we just give you?
I feel like everyone falls back on insanity or whatever, mental illness, and it's, I don't know. Like, some cases, yes, it's absolutely, like, that's the case. I feel like most who you know you're guilty, that's where they try to go.
Well, Ash, we'll be getting into that in, like, 2 seconds.
Oh, okay, sorry.
You're good. You're just a little ahead of the game. You're a little ahead of the game. as the attorneys went to speak to him about not waiving his rights and not speaking to the police, both could sense that something was definitely up. Like, their spidey senses went up.
Speaking of spidey senses, I hear cops in your background or EMS or something.
I don't know. I live right down the street from the police department, so we constantly hear it. But that's good. Okay, at least my microphone is good.
Yeah.
And if you guys don't like background noise, sorry. We do not own a podcast studio. Not yet, at least.
That was the ambiance.
Yeah.
We put that in there. That's fine.
Just putting you in the room with me, you know?
Okay.
So, as they were talking to him, they felt like something was definitely up. That maybe, you know, there was something wrong with him mentally. Had some kind of mental illness. Maybe just, you know, obviously down on his luck type of person. But, like, he was acting super weird, even in context of what he's already done. So, they're defense attorneys. They know what they're looking for. Are they trying just to come up with a defense for him already? Like a defense strategy by saying this type of stuff? I don't know. And a lot of this, I got to just preference this out. I'm going to be saying all this stuff as it's working in the moment. So when we talk about his personalities and stuff, anything that I say does not like show my belief into it or non-belief into it. I'm just reading it as it would have happened, as you would have watched it happen. Does that make sense?
That makes sense.
So this isn't, I'm not trying to talk from it from what we know now type point. I'm talking from the point it is in 1970s and early 80s. So just to clarify. But anywho, so they went out and got in touch with the Southwest Community Mental Health Center, the Friends Department. And they did a sanity evaluation for the criminal courts. Everything that they were seeing, they just wanted, because he was like very withheld, wouldn't talk, or if he did talk, it didn't make much sense. Every time they talked to him, he'd be talking either in a different accent or it was like a whole different personality every time they went to go talk to him. So they wanted to see if, like, is he able to stand trial? So, yeah,
that's creepy.
Yeah. They would also, so this forensic department, they would handle all mental health crises. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I'm a cop.
We didn't go to school for English.
No, I'm just a cop. So take this with a grain of salt. So anytime a mental health crisis would happen in the jail, this forensic department would go and conduct like a safety thing or just like see what's going on with that person. They actually received a call about Billy. He was ripping the toilet off the wall.
Oh my God.
Attempting to cut himself with broken pieces of porcelain. And he was like, I don't even know why you guys are here when they finally showed up. So, I mean, talk about a shitty day.
Literally.
Sorry.
You're punny.
I know. But, so, they wanted to evaluate him. Obviously, he's suicidal. So, they at least have to evaluate him for that, too. As much as they have to evaluate him on everything else that's been happening around him. As they were evaluating for this, they found his artwork. So he had like all this artwork in his jail cell. And they ranged in topics, abilities. Like some paintings would be like magnificent with like line work and shading. And then some would look like a 6-year-old did it. They then discovered the hanging rag doll.
Ew.
And this one is creepy. It's like
I don't even like the sound of this. Let's go.
No. So what is it? Raggedy Andy?
Raggedy Ann and Andy, yeah.
Yeah, so it looks like one of those with a noose around its neck.
Oh, they're so cute.
It's really cute. And it was obviously just done in black. So it was.
Oh no, really that's creepy. Not. Yeah. That went so from cute to creepy quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. So this really got them started on some like mental health issues with him. And this is really what started making them believe that he probably couldn't stand trial, or they were at least questioning it. So a little bit about the insanity plea. I did want to go over this before we get way too far into it. I did a little research because I've never had to deal with it before. But I wanted to. I know a little bit. I know enough, but it definitely wasn't enough to like go on about it. So here's a little bit of a background about the insanity plea and what we know so far. The first case was the McNaughton rule, and this was back in 1843. Daniel McNaughton shot the secretary of the British Prime Minister because he thought they were conspiring against him. He was acquitted for insanity, and at the time of the act, they accused it. He was laboring in such a defect of reason from the disease of the mind as not to know the nature or quality of the act he was doing. Basically, that's legal jargon of he didn't know what he was doing. He was in such a downward spine, or his mental defect was affecting him enough that he had no idea what he was doing. And he didn't know it was wrong, because to him, they were coming after him. So he was acting in self-defense. And if that's what you believe, that's what you believe. But that's honestly what you believe. Now, obviously, people can say that's what they believe, but they're easily, it's seen through. Like, you can tell they're just lying. But sometimes people honestly believe things. When you're schizophrenic, you go off on wild tangents, especially if you're not treated. You know, I've dealt with them. And basically what you have to do sometimes is you just got to go along with them, because they can turn on you in a heartbeat. And if you just sit there and say, no, that's not what happened. Obviously, at one point, you're going to have to. But if you're trying to de-escalate them, definitely arguing with them does not work. So, this is a little bit.
It's basically taking somebody's version of reality.
Oops.
And you know how frustrating that is, like, when someone tells you, like, this isn't what's happening, or this isn't the right thing. Like, you get mad. So, imagine that on top of someone who actually has a mental illness. Like, it's explosive sometimes. So, exactly. Yeah, you do have to go along with it, but unfortunately, like, a lot of people, especially if you want to commit crimes, also abuse it.
Yeah. So we really don't go along with it. We just agree with them or tell them nicely, you know, well, maybe it's not that. It's not a full-on, you can't say you're crazy, you know what I mean? Like, you can't do that. But there was, anyway, this McNaughton rule, you needed two aspects of it. They were incapable of knowing what they were doing at the time of the offense, and incapable of knowing what they did was wrong. Pretty standard.
Yeah.
So, moved on from that, and now we have the irresistible impulse test. Basically, they knew what they did was wrong, but could not show self-control because of a mental disorder. Could you imagine that they still use this impulse test rule? Basically, all the killers in the 70s would just get off.
Oh my god.
Because they could not. They have no self-control to do what they were doing. And how many times did they say, I just could not control myself? I had to do it.
They'd be like, okay, here's the front door. You are free to go.
Yep.
So sorry you can't have self-control. Try better next time.
Exactly. Then they moved on to the Durham rule.
Durham. Oh, I thought you were asking for a drum roll.
Oh, Durham or Durham. From what I can understand of this, this rule was too broad with the terms mental illness or defect. Basically saying that if you were found to have an illness or a defect of the mental capacity, you were determined insane. Which is kind of crazy because, I mean, like, people with high anxiety, bipolar,
PTSD.
Not that those things should be taken lightly. It's just you should not be able to use some of those as a defense of why you committed a heinous act.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So now we're using, now we're up to the Model Penal Code in 1972. This code says that the defendant is not responsible for criminal conduct where he or she, as a result of mental disease or defect, did not possess substantial capacity either appreciate the criminality of this conduct or conform his or her conduct to the requirements of the law. Let's kind of unwind that a little bit, because they love using these big words on us simple folks.
I was going to say, what is this legal translation?
So basically, they don't have the capacity to, when it says appreciate the criminality of their conduct, they don't know how serious, or they don't think what they're doing is wrong. Basically, these are all the same things. Some of them are a little bit more liberal with the term, and some of them more conservative with the term. And you know how politicians are. They want their thing to be the thing to be used. So they just change a little bit here and there for their penal code to get in. But the biggest thing with this one is, like, the way it was worded, that it did not allow the defense of a psychopath or sociopath. So that was a good thing. And this is what kind of kept all those serial killers that were in that time frame in jail.
Well, that's makes good, because it does. Because, yeah, we don't want them walking out the front door on a technicality of, oh, you can't control your impulses, or you have this, you know, you say you have this mental illness.
Yeah. So the best way to put this one is, like, the way they put it is a person might know that their action was wrong because society says it's wrong. But if society knew what they knew, they would understand why they committed the crime.
So if society knew what they knew, like if...
Like they're, like with the British Prime Minister, if the society knew that they were after him...
Oh, got it.
You know what I mean? So that's a little confusing, because it's not always that black and white. And then in 1984, we had the Comprehensive Crime Control Act. This act now requires and is the federal law that the defendant must prove by clear and convincing evidence that at the time of the commission of the act of the offense, the defendant, as a result of a severe mental disease or defect, was unable to appreciate the nature and quality of the wrongness of his or her acts, aka knowing from right from wrong. The same damn thing the other four showed. But now this kind of claims that the defendant has to prove. So we know that it's the state's responsibility to prove guilty, right? So the defendant doesn't have to prove that he's innocent. The state has to prove that he's guilty. But now for this, he has to prove that he has or she has a mental illness that would render them not fit for trial. So the defense doesn't have to, or the prosecution doesn't have to show that they're not, you know, insane. The defense has to prove that they are insane.
That makes sense. It feels like it's a little bit more challenge for...
Well, yeah, I would just use that defense all the time, because it's going to be impossible for you to prove that I'm not.
Yeah.
Especially if I'm not talking to you.
Yeah, exactly.
So there was a couple myths that I actually found. Insanity plea is overused. That's actually a myth. Only 1% of the time is the insanity plea even claimed from a defense, because it's so hard to prove. It's so hard to prove.
You know what? I feel like everyone thinks it's so overused is because those are the trials that we always hear about. You don't hear about all the other ones that are straightforward unless it's like something...
Well, you know what? It's also because of the movies and the TV shows.
Yeah, that is true, too.
Yeah, it makes a good story.
Hollywood. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you're found not guilty of reasons of insanity, you are released from custody. That is false. You are actually probably going to be confined more than you would if you just went to jail. Because now you're in a state hospital where you're mentally ill and not supposed to be able to take care of yourself. So if you want to fake it, that's fine. Faking it, it'd be impossible. But now still you're in a mental hospital. Yeah, you're still locked up in a hospital. And you probably...
You know what, that would scare me even more, because just for the paranormal side, all those state hospitals... Now, I know things are way better now.
Well, we are going to get into that, too. Without the paranormal stuff, but...
Yeah,
this like might lead into like, another episode of scary mental hospitals. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but that's exactly what I think about when it's like, okay, you're going to be locked up in a mental hospital. Like, I think of the conditions and stuff of all the old ones that are shut down now that people ghost hunt. I'm like, no, thanks. I don't want to be there either.
Yeah, they're definitely not like the ones in psych where they go and have the fluffy pillows with your hands in them.
And the mittens with baby muskrat.
Baby muskrat, ah. And you can just get Skittles whenever you want.
Yes.
So basically, that's basically what I got for you on like the insanity plea. I'm sure there's much more. I just didn't want to spend too much time on it, but I did want to give a little bit of background. And I probably screwed some things up, so if you need to email us, you know where to find us, and you can tell me how wrong I am, and I'm probably not going to care.
That's don't go in there, 19@gmail.com. Address them the bill.
Yeah. Oh, well, what are you going to do?
It sounded good. I mean, I learned stuff.
I'm just a cop talking shit, you know? The judge on this was Judge Flowers, and he pretty much agreed to have a psychological evaluation done on Billy to determine if he was fit to stand for trial. Dorothy Turner was the psychologist from the Southwest Community Mental Hospital, who spent time with Billy in the beginning. So she was there at the beginning of all this. She attempted to give him this is the inkblot test, and I'm going to screw up what it's actually called. The Rorschach test?
The Rorschach? That was very... Your Pittsburghese came out.
Yeah, did it? my bad.
I don't know how to say it, so I'm not, but I know what you're talking about.
The Rorschach. Yeah, that Pittsburgh is just going to show too much.
The washer and dryer. Washer closed.
There's already two R's in there, and I feel like I'm adding four more in there.
It does sound like you're adding four more.
So, you psychologists out there will know what we're talking about. But it's the inkblot test. Everybody knows what the inkblot test is. Yes. Basically, they've shown, and if you don't, you can Google it, or it's basically they show you a paper with a big ink blot on it, and you have to tell them what do you see. And that's how they determine if you're having mental illness or not. I don't know. I don't know how it works. I'm only kind of sort of a doctor. So.
Doctor adjacent.
Yeah. But she was an expert in this test. So that's what she did. But what she did find was that his renderings of these ink blots were disjointed, confusing, and really didn't get any use out of them because he was all over the place. He was also given many other tests that resulted in the differences in IQ on any given day. So one day he'd have an IQ very high, and then the next day it would be near intellectual disability. I feel like that's wrong.
I don't know, but I liked it. Intellectual.
We're going to go with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But basically, he was mentally challenged, is what they were saying. It's like, one day he'd be mentally challenged, and then the next day he'd be, you know, Elon Musk. So that was a little concerning for them, because that's a lot of change very quickly. Negative and positive change. Billy was also put through EEG machines. Basically, this measures the brain waves. These waves have a different frequency throughout our lifetime. So when we're little, we have a different brain wave. When we're like in our 20s and 30s, it's a little bit different, and then different as you go get older. During these EEG tests, the administrator of the test observed that these brain waves coming from Billy were consistent with somebody younger than what his age was. So it'd be like me and you having a brain wavelength of like a 12-year-old.
Huh. It's significantly different. That is so cool that they can tell that.
Well, this is 19... So, I'm just, like I said, I'm just talking about what happened in 1977. I didn't do any research. I don't know if this is still believed. So, just... This is what I was told, and I'm relaying it to you. So, this could have been disproven in the 90s or the early 2000s, but I don't know. Or it could still hold true. I just don't know. Just telling you what I was told. When Billy would be interviewed, he would oftentimes speak in different accents or have different mannerisms than normal. Sometimes he would switch personalities in the middle of an interview, and there would be a not-so-subtle tail of it. So basically what they would say is he would be talking, he would stop talking, his eyes would roll back in his head, and then when he came back, he had nystagmus, which is like the fluttering of the eyeball, which basically is, we use that to determine if you are high or drunk when you're drunk driving, because you can't control it. Some people can, like, you can kind of replicate it. Like, if you ever stare at those 3D books when we were younger?
Yeah.
That's kind of what your eye would do. But this is a little bit more involuntary, and it doesn't move as much. It's just, like, a little bit. Definitely look at a video. It's kind of crazy. Actually, John did this in the academy for me. Or, I'm sorry, DJ Debunk did this for me.
DJ Debunk.
he came and drank a bunch of beers
at
the police academy, and we had to give him tests, the field sobriety tests. And basically, we just went around, and each person was a different drunk, and John was pretty hammered. And we had to make him do, like, stand on a leg and walk in a straight line, and then does this nystagmus test. And when you see it the first time, it is freaky, because they don't even know they're doing it.
Oh, man. I know what you're talking about, and it does freak me out. Anything with the eyes really does freak me out. But have you ever watched videos of people going through that transition?
Yeah, so basically that's what he is like.
Yeah.
It's like he gets possessed.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say. I was like, it's like almost like a possession. But it's freaky. It's some of them. Okay, so sidebar. I am on this side of TikTok that people who have this, and I don't want to give too much away because I know you're diving into it. Their transitions are not as, I don't want to say scary, because that's really not the right word. It's not as dramatic, I guess. Like, some people who have this condition, their transitions are smooth, but the eyes are still there, so it is still kind of creepy.
And I should say, like, a lot of this, we'll get into my thoughts on it later, like, in a couple episodes.
It's fascinating.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I lost my place on where we were. I accidentally scrolled. I will... Whoopsie. So after his nystagmus and his fluttering and his, you know, whatever he did, it'd be a totally different person. This is when they started to think that it could be a case of multiple personality disorder. It describes when a different aspects of your personality splinter into other entities without the knowledge of the other entity. Basically, everybody has multiple aspects of your personality. It's what makes you you. For somebody, and at least the original thought of multiple personality disorder, which is called something totally different now. I think it's called like dissociative identity disorder.
Yeah, DID.
DID. Basically what they thought was, and I don't know if it's still what they think, but back then they basically thought each aspect of your personality had a different, I guess, avatar, and that's who would take over.
I think it is that same way today, because again, like I said, I'm on this side of TikTok because I find it fascinating. But yeah, like, every, so they're alters. you have your main one, which is you. You have a guard, which holds the other ones back. And then just depending on what you're going through, stress or whatever, like an alter might come forward that's like a kid, and literally their personality changes, their talk changes, they act like a kid. And, you know, something else might happen, and older, you know, one might come out and they act older. Their face changes. It's crazy, but it's all the personalities that you have. But yeah, it's all, they don't know about each other. Sometimes they do, but it's fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Well, we can imagine the prosecution just thought they were throwing shit against the wall to see what sticks.
Oh, especially in, like, what, we're in the 70s still, right?
Well,
especially back then.
I think I'll mention it. If I don't mention it this episode, I'll definitely mention it next episode. This is actually, I think it's in the next couple sentences, so we'll just cover it here in the next couple sentences. So pin that thought.
Pin it.
The judge, Judge Flowers, if you remember, appointed Dr. George Harding of the Harding Hospital to evaluate Billy. With everything going on, they took him from the first psychologist, and then moved him to this Dr. Harding, who had his own little practice, and that was at the Harding Hospital. When he would interview Billy, he would note that many voice changes, accents, behaviors. Then he would eventually ask for the assistance of Dr. Ronald Litvick. It almost sounds like Lipschitz from Rugrats. to see if Billy had the mental capacity to attend trial, because you got to remember that this is going to take a bunch of people to kind of prove it for Billy. They want as many people to help him as possible. There was a lot that was not known about multiple personality at the time, like you said, but there was a lot of public interest in it. There was a book which turned into a movie called Sybil. It was written with the help of a psychiatrist named Dr. Cornelia Wilbur. She was brought in to interview Billy and to see if she could give her expertise in the field. And this was a popular movie. It was about a girl, I think. She had, like, I want to say 16 personalities.
Oh, wow.
And then there was actually, like, a book a couple years prior to that everybody loved. There was an older movie that people liked, Three Faces of Eve or something like that. So there was a lot of public interest. Like, it was interesting to people. And obviously, yeah, books were flying, movies were made. During the interviews, though, with Dr. Wilbur, he would start to sit in different postures and at one time spoke in a British accent. The prosecutor, who was totally skeptical at the beginning, was now starting to think if this was fake, it was a very good acting job. So basically, if it is a fake one, Billy's keeping his story straight. He's doing everything by the book. He's not forgetting what this entity said or what that entity said. I mean, just try to remember a story that you told that actually was true and how many times you've changed it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, like, you would have to always be on. Like, how hard would that be? Like,
always. Everybody's always watching you at all times. Yeah. Hours of video. You guys can watch the videos on YouTube, too, of Billy Milligan and his interviews.
And you're constantly being tested, and so that's a lot. That would be a lot for it to be fake.
Then you
got to
remember which personality is which name and what do they do.
And how do they sound and act.
Yep. Dr. Harding was also convinced and wrote a judge a letter stating that he did not see that Billy was fit to stand for trial for his mental illness. Now, since the way the law was written in Ohio, Dr. Harding could only say that Billy was legally insane, or he could not say if Billy was legally sane or not, but would give his recommendation aloud to court to decide if he was insane or not. We'll get into that a little bit later too, about the court proceeding and everything later. Billy was transferred to the Harding Hospital, as I said before, where he would be further evaluated before his trial. While at the hospital, Billy began to draw again, and each drawing would have different skill levels, just like the ones they found in the hospital. So remember when I said he had, like, the rag doll, but then he would have one that looked like the Mona Lisa, and then another one that looked like a 6-year-old would do it.
Yeah.
Basically, what they came up with is now they're starting to think multiple personalities, that every painting is done by a different personality.
That would make sense.
So
if every drawing, painting, whatever is different, could be a different personality.
Yep. Now, this kind of helped the evaluation because now they can identify each personality. We'll start to identify. You know, which one was a kid, which one was older, which one had skill. His personalities were varying in gender and age. There was Arthur. He was the one that claimed to be in control of everything. He was the one that made Billy, quote unquote, go to sleep. And he was very intelligent.
So he would be like the guard.
Yeah. And he was very manipulative as well. Reagan was the one that showed a lot of rage and violence. So his name is actually spelled like R-A-G-E-N, like rage with an N. And he had a Yugoslavian accent.
And that is so interesting, because I don't know if they ever brought this up in the documentary, but has he ever traveled internationally to any of these places? Like, nope. How do these personalities get these international accents without ever going there?
No, he's never traveled there. So, and then we'll also talk about some other things that bring this stuff into question. I think this episode's probably going to go 3. I'm not sure. We've actually already gone probably over our half hour that we already said, but we're good. So this one might probably will be longer. This one will probably be 45 minutes, so.
But you know, welcome. Editing will help. Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah. Tommy was a mischievous escape artist. He would pick the lock at the hospital, leave the facility, and just go to the front door just because he wanted to show them that he could escape if he wanted to.
I wish I had that personality.
Christine was a frightened little girl. David is a 9-year-old that would account for all the abuse that Billy encountered. We'll talk about that next episode. If his bringing up is true, he had one hell of a bringing up. We would also hear about Alan and Adela, too. Don't know too much about them. Adela will come in to play for the explanation of the rapes later. But we really don't know much about the personalities themselves. According to Billy, the personalities came to know each other during these evaluations. So they came to know like who does what. They talk about each other as they're different people. So
was he saying that they didn't know about the other personalities before? So like when...
That's what I think. But I guess the way that I saw some of the interviews, it's like they all know of each other and know what each other did, but Billy had no idea until the evaluation.
Oh, got it. So it was like a cloud. That would make more sense.
They were all there. One had control, but they all knew what was going on.
Yeah, except for Billy. Okay. So.
And that's where I'm kind of going to end it for this episode. The next episode, we're going to talk about his family and his upbringing. Maybe you'll get into a little bit of the criminal activity. I don't know if we're gonna have time.
I don't know.
We'll see.
Yeah.
So I hope everybody, sorry for like the kind of like the weirdness of this episode. We're trying to get back into a groove. We had a little bit of technical difficulty right before this, so a little frustrating, but I hope the sound quality was better this time. Don't forget to go to magicmind.co/don't go and get your 40% off of your first subscription or 20% off your first purchase. Also, subscribe to us on all your podcast channels. I'm actually going to let Ashley do this because she's really good at this.
Yeah, so we are definitely on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. I'll find out the other ones, but make sure you like and subscribe. Leave us a comment or a 5-star rating so we can jump back into the charts here. Follow us on social media. We have Instagram. Don't go in there. Like, don't_go_in_ you know, you'll find it. Search it. You'll figure it out. Facebook page and group, and then we're on TikTok, so it's a Don't Go In There pod, and we're still trying to figure out TikTok. I'm not great at it, but you know, we got some videos up. Yeah, you were really good at it.
It was.
You could jump back on.
well, we gotta wait. We gotta wait until the next job.
Yeah, yeah.
Being Being in narcotics, you can't really have your face out there on TikTok. It's hard to buy drugs that way. No.
Anyways, and then if you have, you know, always feel free to email us at don'tgointhere19@gmail.com. Let us know how we're doing. And if you have a true crime story or a paranormal story or something you want to share, let us know.
Yeah, absolutely. We're also, and Ash, I know I didn't bring this up with you, but it just popped in my head. If you guys know anybody that has a fascinating true crime story, wrote a book or anything like that, that we could possibly interview, that'd be awesome. We would love to have more guests on starting now to talk to people. I think we got a pretty good setup for everything now that we can record our calls. We're going to see about putting our video up somewhere of me and Ashley so you guys can see our beautiful faces.
They're so pretty.
I definitely have a voice meant for radio, or I'm not a voice, a face meant for radio. So,
and you do have a nice voice for radio too.
It's soothing. I probably put some people to sleep, so.
Yeah. That Pittsburgh accent really hits home.
Yeah. Worcestershire test. So, Ash, I say we get on out of here, and we'll be back. We're planning on releasing every Wednesday
or Thursday? Wednesday, yeah.
Every Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Because most of you are probably out of podcasts by then. And we're hoping you guys can just listen to us during the weekend or something. So,
yeah, so Ash, if you are liking and subscribe to us, you won't miss it.
Exactly. So, Ash, anything else?
No, that's it for this week. We will see you guys next week.
That'll be it. See you guys next week. And remember, don't go in there.